Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adask, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Wednesday, June 8th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
We have Wendy Wilson joining us here right after the market report from Apothecary Herbs. And until then, gold had a very nice day today. Mainly, it was up $17, popped up, stayed there, and in the last minute of trade in this New York spot price, $18.40 for gold at $12.62.60. Silver's up 66 cents at $17.11, a big day for silver, up over 4%. Platinum was up 12 at $1,015. Palladium was up 6 at $564. So a nice day for the precious metals segment there. USDX today, a little pressure, nothing, you know, big. 0.23 to the downside at 93.61, 93.61. Although crude oil was back up over a dollar, I would think that would have a major impact on the gold prices today. 51.38. And the paper markets today, the Dow was up 66 points at 18,004, back over 18. The Nasdaq up 12 at 49.74. The S&P up 6 at 21.19. 10-year yield down 0.01 at 1.71%. The euro was stronger today, 0.36 at 1.14. So the Dow continues to rise, and we'll talk a little bit about the European Central Bank began buying corporate bonds today, June 8th. So that was probably the most interesting news for the day, but we'll talk about that after Wendy Wilson, after the first break of today. And I hope she's on the line with us. Wendy Wilson, are you there?
I'm here, Melanie. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're just great. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, always a pleasure to be with you and Al. Hi, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about what's going on here. There's a trend with young adults, according to research, using a different kind of supplement. They're using what is called inorganic, non-vitamin, non-mineral dietary supplements. So apparently 1 in 5 young adults between the ages of 18 and 30 are, buying into the hype on these products. So that means that 49 million young adults are technically putting themselves at risk, because what they're doing is they're mixing these inorganic supplements with over-the-counter and prescription medications by about 76% of the time. So you might be asking, well, what's an inorganic or non-vitamin, non-mineral? Well, it's instead of a botanical product, what they're using on a regular basis are products to enhance their physical performance. So these products are, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, about 8, 9 of them. There's the A-solanomethanine. We'll get into what that is in a minute. Also, they're using progesterone cream, melatonin, bee pollen, fish oil, glucosamine, and chondroitin. I know some of you are probably saying, well, what's so bad about bee pollen and fish oil? Well, we'll get to that in just a second. First, let's tackle that first one with the big long name, that endocellomethylenone. It's typically used for arthritis. It can be used for depression and dementia and liver problems as well. And this usually is made up from two compounds, and it breaks down brain chemicals. So it messes with your serotonin, your melatonin, and your dopamine. So these products have numerous side effects and drug interactions. And this product particularly does not go well with botanical products at all. The other thing they're using is that progesterone cream. They use that for adrenal fatigue. So also women use it for hormone replacement therapy and infertility. But this drug has a number of health risks associated with it, including depression, which is probably why if they're using it, they're using that first one, the endocellomethylenone, for depression and just feeling bad all over with the arthritis. Now, the melatonin you're probably familiar with, it comes in two forms, natural or synthetic. The natural is derived from animal pineal glands, and it comes with a risk of viral contamination. The synthetic is a chemically made variety, and people who take this, they usually use it to sleep better. And as sleep aids go, this can give you the effect the next day of foggy brain or headache, feeling depressed, or having digestive upset. The bee pollen is pretty natural. People say that's, you know, from bees. People are using it for weight loss, for more stamina, better athletic performance, but it can present allergic reactions. The fish oil can be highly processed, so they really have to be selective there, but they use it to improve their blood pressure and triglycerides and cholesterol. And women sometimes use it to improve symptoms associated with their menstruational cycle. Now, the glucosamine is one that people use it to improve their joint health and reduce pain. It's made from shellfish. It's from the shells of shellfish. And it has some allergic reactions, especially if you are allergic to shellfish, but it can cause also drowsiness, headaches, and digestive problems. And lastly, the chondroitin, used for joint pain again, normally comes from animal sources and in some cases from diseased animals. So the side effects are digestive upset, headache, swollen eyelids or legs, hair loss, and irregular heartbeat. So there's a concern that this product can make asthma worse and increase the risk of blood clots and prostate cancer. So these young adults are very active. They're also smokers and sometimes heavy drinkers. And so they're regularly physically active, and that's why they have a lot of the joint pain, and they're taking these type of products. And but they're mixing them with dangerous medications because a lot of labels don't tell them, you know, don't mix with other supplements, herbal medicines, and so forth, because counter regs aren't there. And I always tell people, when in doubt, don't mix, unless, of course, you have the guidance of a physician. So you may want to ask me, Al, what are they mixing it with on the prescribed area?
Okay, what are they mixing it with on the prescribed area? How's that?
Well, yeah, very good, very good. Well,
thank
the
you,
researchers.
I had my melatonin today, so I'm...
You're doing good. Well, the researchers on this, of course, this article was published in the American Journal of Medical Sciences. The people they were using in the trial study said that they were using daily medicine needed to take and maintain health. So that could be a wide range of things, from cardiovascular to diabetic, types of medications. But here's an important thing that they projected for this group. The researchers said that it's an interesting behavior that these young adults, when they grow older, they reported that they would use more organic supplements down the road, especially if they fell into a higher income category and were college educated. Now, remember,
does that
they
mean
use
these
a,
things are cheap. Are we
well,
saying
they said
the problem, the supplements you're talking about, these inorganic supplements, is their primary value that they're cheap?
Yeah, and their study group was varied education, economic, and cultural backgrounds. So, and I guess, you know, when they're in college and they're just starting out, they can't afford, I guess, a higher quality product, so that's what they're doing. The other thing they noticed is that they also thought that the younger adults weren't discerning between marketing significance of natural versus organic, because those words are totally abused in the marketplace, and you really have to know what you're looking at. So as they grew older, their choice of supplements changed. They were buying things like echinacea, ginseng, ginkgo biloba, garlic, St. John's wort, peppermint, ginger, chamomile, kava kava, and ephedra. And when they were asked why were they using these herbs, they reported they were using them for the most common conditions: cold and flu, digestive problems, bone health, headaches, anxiety, depression, and sleep problems. The same reasons they were using the stuff to begin with. You know?
I don't understand why these are referred to as inorganic. For example, I'm going to assume bee pollen is
organic. Yeah, it's organic.
It's the same thing as fish oil. And
well, the thing is if it's processed, if it's heated, a lot of these organics change chemically. The compounds are altered when you process them. And they're no longer considered organic. So that's the issue. Yeah.
Okay, what is the definition of organic here? It's not just, you know, to me, organic means there's probably some carbon in it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, just meaning it's got something to do with life. It came from some sort of a living animal or whatever. And it is, I'm not sure that I don't know exactly what organic means, but in chemistry, I believe it means there's the presence of carbon, maybe oxygen in the.
And there's going to be the presence of organic minerals, the ones that are sustaining life, like boron and things like that. I mean, sulfur, for instance, you'll find those in living organic matter. So, problem is when you process a lot of these organic ingredients, you alter them and they become an inorganic source when you're done.
Well, that sounds to me like it would be harder if it's inorganic. Is it less digestible? Is it harder to assimilate?
Well, when you heat, you destroy nutrition, minerals big time. So you alter it chemically, and it's not going to be as nutritious as it was in its original state. But of course, you know, we're not going to go around eating raw meat, for instance, because wouldn't be, you know, safe for us. It's safe for animals, but not for us, because our digestive system is different. But when it comes to your, you know, plants and your fruits and vegetables, they're altered as soon as, they start diminishing a lot of their nutritional sources the moment they're harvested too. But according to the publication, they also said that these young people who are using these supplements and drugs, they're not informing their doctors 50% of the time. So why are 50% of patients not telling doctors about their supplements they're taking, organic or non-organic? And most likely it's because patients want to avoid an unpleasant conversation with their doctor, because medical science really often won't approve of the natural therapy that is unless it's highly standardized and regulated. So the chances of scientific studies recommending organic foods and herbs instead of prescription drugs and surgeries, kind of like, I think you'll find a unicorn first, to be honest. And scientific medicine has researched a lot of foods and a lot of herbs. They already know it provides many beneficial compounds, but they haven't discovered how they can successfully extract those compounds from these elements to make prescribed drugs from them. So they already know foods and herbs work in their whole food state, which really doesn't offer any financial benefit to medicine.
You can't patent it. What fun is that?
Yeah, so in the meantime, the only way to eliminate this competition really is to demand it be standardized and regulated like prescription drugs, and that's what they're working towards. So this, in effect, would be like, you know, you ask your have your grandmother's garden be strictly regulated and tested before she could partake of the bounty, you know? And in such regulations, if those existed, no one could afford to have a garden, right?
Well, I get what you're saying. I mean, the government doesn't mind whether you can afford it or not. They feel compelled to regulate everything in this country.
Well, this is what the U.S. National Library of Medicine and National Institutes of Health said in April of 2008. They said herbal products are not likely to become an important alternative to standard medical therapies unless there are changes to the regulation, standardization, and funding for research on these products. So let's just go to Europe for a minute, because that's where it's all going down. When we look at what's happening to the supplement market in Europe, we find the people there have lost the use of 20,000 medicinal herbs as they've become more regulated. So Europeans are losing their right to a lot of health freedoms there as the powerful pharmaceutical and health corporations are restricting their choices. Because I get calls from Europeans a lot about getting herbs from America because they can't get them there, or they have to get it through their doctor and it's a prescription and it's made by a pharmaceutical company. So if Americans aren't going to be vigilant, they're going to find the same circumstances kind of trickle on over here across the pond, and it's called the Food Harmonization Code, or COTEX, mm-hmm. and it originated in Europe. Now, think about this, Al, Melanie. 100,000 people a year in the U.S. die from using their prescription drugs as instructed. And those are supposedly highly regulated, standardized drugs, and they're killing thousands of people. So how many people do herbs kill a year?
Well, perhaps none.
Well,
to
my understanding, there aren't any death certificates that confirm death by supplement, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen any. Let me read you this quote from a retired physician. Do I have time?
Yeah, you got about
time?
A minute and a half.
Okay, this is a retired physician. He says, as a retired physician, I can honestly say that unless you are in a serious accident, your best chance of living to a ripe old age is to avoid doctors and hospitals and learn about nutrition, herbal medicine, and other forms of natural medicine. Almost all drugs are toxic and are designed only to treat symptoms and not to cure anyone. Vaccines are highly dangerous, have never been adequately studied or proven to be effective, and have a poor risk-reward ratio. Most surgery is unnecessary, and most textbooks of medicine are inaccurate and deceptive. Almost every disease is said to be without known cause or genetic, which is untrue. In short, our mainstream medical system is hopelessly inept or corrupt, and the treatment for cancer or degenerative diseases is a national scandal. The sooner you learn this, the better off you'll be. End of quote. That's Alan Greensberg, MD. He was a 1961 graduate from Albert Einstein's College of Medicine of Yeshiva University, specializing in neurology, and he is now 80 years old.
Well, that's not a surprise to me. It's always good to hear that somebody with authority is making statements like that. It confirms what a lot of people like myself and you suspect.
Yep. Well, we just got to take the power back, like he said. Yeah, and he's telling people, take the power back. You have power over your health when you educate yourself and implement some nutrition. And that's what I've been harping on for like 20 years.
Why don't you give us a little contact information, Wendy?
Sure. They can reach out to us at Apothecary Herbs. Ask for a free catalog. The number is toll-free at 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or visit us on the web at thepowerherbs.com.
All right, Wendy, thank you. Look forward to talking to you next week. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. Give her a call. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom. We'll be right back in just a moment. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll-free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to remind the listeners, gold is up silver is up 66 cents today, up over 4%. I only have a few of those $50 face value of 90% silver at yesterday's prices. So give us a call at 800-375-4188. It's $670, $50 face value, 90% silver. That includes all your shipping costs. And we do have a limited amount at that price. I'll sell what I have until we adjust the price on that. So get off your toes and pick up that phone and give us a call. Visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And that's about it, Al. You know, the stock market, you have the NASDAQ that's close to 5,000 once again. You have the Dow back up over 18,000. But you know, everything is going to be sugar-coated. Everybody's going to think, oh, we're in a new rally. Everything's good and fine. And, you know, the 38,000 new jobs for last month is totally forgotten. This country has a very short memory. But truly, if you go back on the NASDAQ, the first time it hit 5,000 was all the way back in March 2000. And it plunged as the dot-com bubble hit. And so basically, what has the NASDAQ done since the year 2000? Nothing. It basically tread water. And the example I saw was the presidencies. You know, it was the last part of Bill Clinton's presidency. It's been under these levels for two terms of Bush and two terms of Barack Obama. So for 16 years, it's done nothing, and it's only climbing its way back to where it was in 2000. If that money that you have in the NASDAQ was invested in gold, you wouldn't be treading water for 16 years. So,
Got an article here that's just interesting, at least to me. This is from the Washington Free Beacon, and its record gun sales continue through May. The month of May saw yet another gun-related background check record-making. It the 13th month to see an all-time high. We've got apparently 13 consecutive months of bigger and bigger gun sales. The FBI completed a record 1,870,000 checks through the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, or NICS, this May, just in 1 month. Almost 2 million of these background checks. That's almost 300,000 more. That translates into about 20% higher than May of 2015, which set a record at that time. It's also nearly a million more checks than May of 2008, which incidentally is when Barack Obama took office, was elected in 2008. And point being is we've gone from a million a month, a million in the month of May 2008, to 1,800,000 in the month of May this year. Month of May in 2008, month of May this year. Implication is that they've almost, the number of the sale of guns has almost doubled. While Obama has been in office, which just, I don't know, amuses me, delights me. Every time the guy stands up, he says, I think maybe I'm going to implement some more gun control regulations. Bang! They sell a couple hundred thousand more guns that afternoon. I'm exaggerating as such as that afternoon, but regardless, it's funny to me. The streak of gun-related background checks have come during renewed focus by Democratic leaders on gun control efforts. Both President Obama and presidential candidate Hillary Clinton have publicly expressed support for Australian-style gun confiscation measures. Clinton has also said that the Supreme Court was wrong on Second Amendment gun rights protection. Well, Clinton is nuts, and Barack Obama is nuts, and if they try to impose Australian-style gun confiscation and the American people go along with it, the American people are nuts. These guns are here for a reason, and it's not to go duck hunting. And the government doesn't want them. I've talked about this in the past. I'm not even getting into it right now. But the Second Amendment is not there to protect us from an invasion by the British coming across the Atlantic or an invasion by the Red Chinese marching across the Bering Straits. As is true for all 10 of the Bill of Rights, the 10 amendments that comprise the Bill of Rights, they are all expressly intended by Congress. When Congress sent the proposed amendments out, they sent either 13 or 17 to the states, and they said, here's some proposed amendments, and tell us which ones you want to ratify. And the states agreed to ratify 10 of them, and they became our Bill of Rights. The Congress included a cover letter with those proposed amendments. And in the cover letter, Congress explained that the purpose of these proposed amendments was to prevent misconstruction or abuse of the powers of the Constitution. They were intended to protect the people of the states of the Union against the federal government. That's why you have a Second Amendment. It's to protect you against the federal government. You can look this up for yourself. You can go take a, you can Google this, preamble to Bill of Rights. That cover letter has come to be called the preamble to Bill of Rights. Google it. You'll find it. You'll find it at .gov websites. This is not some patriot theory. They tell you the purpose was to prevent misconstruction or abuse of the powers of the Constitution. I don't have any powers under the Constitution. The only people that have powers under the Constitution are officers, elected officers of the federal government, officials, employees, bureaucrats. They have powers under the Constitution, and the Second Amendment is one of 10 that are intended to prevent misconstruction or abuse by the federal government, and this is exactly why the federal government is so eager to try to impose gun control. They understand that they are the targets that George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and the Founding Fathers, they are the targets that the Founding Fathers had in mind when they enacted the First Amendment and the Second Amendment and so on. The first 10 amendments. Protect we the people against them, the government. They don't want you to be protected against the government. And the fact that they want to take your guns away is evidence that they are up to something that is no good for any of us.
Well, Al, I wonder if the reason this is up so much, and I'm interested in it also, is the idea that Hillary has a chance to become president, and they know which direction. So it makes you wonder what the mindset is. We all know with Obama, we all know what his agenda is, and of course he only has a few more months left. And he's already mentioned that this was one area that he didn't succeed. And so he's running out of time. So
unlike all the other areas where he did succeed.
His office
it's
time.
It's just interesting. And it's one of these things that the implications are political. The implications are also to some degree economic. When people are out buying all these guns, it does not imply that they have enormous confidence in the existing system. Right? It's not just a question. People aren't buying guns just because Obama says he's going to take them away, or at least he says he'd like to. It's not just that simple. There's something else going on here, and it's not just Obama per se. In part, it's one of those leaves in the breeze that suggests that the people really don't have all that much confidence in the system, and they think maybe they were going to need to protect themselves in the foreseeable future.
Well, in addition to that, also look at the violence that we've had with Ferguson. That's all happened within the last year and a half. What we've seen in various places around the country, Baltimore and so forth. So yeah. People do feel threatened to a degree to where they're going to go out and purchase more. But that is a significant amount from a year ago when you look at the different situations.
Since a year ago and 13 yeah. consecutive, apparently, months of rising records. The best thing Obama could do is say he's going to mandate everybody have a gun. He's going to order everybody to buy one. Forget Obamacare. You're going to all have to buy guns.
But also,
that might change people's opinions. Like, wait a second, you can't order us to have guns. You know, that might do him some good. But every time he talks about, hey, I think maybe we'll take your guns, people say, yeah, well, let's see if you can find them. You've got so many guns buried around here that let's see how many you can find.
I'm not sure what month Hillary announced her candidacy. Might have been around May.
Probably 20 years ago.
Yeah. But I think it was May of last year where she officially made her announcement. So I think it was the beginning of May last year. So.
Well, probably May Day. That's communist. Yeah. Big communist celebration, May 1st.
Maybe.
Maybe that was it.
Could be.
Or maybe it was, maybe it wasn't May, maybe it was April 1st. Did she announce on April 1st, Melody?
I'm still thinking it's a joke, but anyway, what's next, Al?
We got an article here on Detroit from Ms. Shedlock. And he says, Detroit, headline is Detroit, fresh out of bankruptcy, discovers $195 million pension shortfall. And he talks a little about the history of the bankruptcy in Detroit. They exited bankruptcy in 2014. It was the largest municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history. The bondholders, that is to say those who lent some of their wealth to the Detroit city government, were totally screwed in favor of the pensioners. They had to take care of the people who worked for the government and have a pension. All right, and they ripped off the bondholders. Those are the creditors, people that had some money. They were responsible. They had saved some money. They were prudent. They had money to invest. They were foolish enough to invest it in Detroit in these paper bonds, and in the end, they lost much of their assets while the pensioners were protected. Now, somebody's got to lose in these things, and whether it's the pensioners who lose or it's the bondholders that lose, you know, I don't know. You can flip a coin and say which one is right and which is wrong. But here's the thing that gets me about government pensions. It's my strong suspicion that the government itself, the people receiving these pensions from government, they're not really paying for their pensions. They're paying for part of it. But it's up to the taxpayers to fund much of their pensions. And the taxpayers, in at least in some instances, the government employees can retire after 20 years, and they can enjoy pensions that are double or triple what you can expect out of Social Security, while people on Social Security, ordinary people, they're going to get a relatively, you know, enough to get by on. It's better than poking the eye with a sharp stick, $1,200, $1,200 a month, something like that. All right, but they're maybe going to work 45 years before they can retire. Some of the government gets out in 20 years. And they expect the taxpayers to pay for their pensions. And this is where, to me, we have a problem here. You can't just sit back and say, well, we've got to raise taxes on all you idiots out there in TV land because you've got to support me in my retirement. I think the government had to reasonably, government employees, any employee, if you're going to put away money for your retirement, it's got to come out of your income. If they promise you that, look, we'll just soak the taxpayers. Don't worry about it. Get those idiot taxpayers, they'll go for anything. And that's what's happened. As in fact, the way this article concludes, they say absurd pension promises are the cause for Detroit's financial crisis. Huh? They made extraordinary promises to government employees. And the government employees should have been smart enough to say, wait a second, I don't think you can deliver that much, can you? It's, oh, yeah, we can. We're the government. You know, we can just raise taxes on the idiot taxpayers. We can squeeze them for as much money as we want. Well, the pension, the people entitled to a government pension, they are complaining that they've been ripped off. Well, I don't feel much sympathy for them, insofar as their pensions were supposedly going to be paid for by the taxpayers. They're out to rip off the taxpayers. Right? They're saying, well, I'm not going to fund my own pension plan. I'll let the taxpayers, they can work for 45 years before they can retire on Social Security, and I can work for 20 years before I can retire, and we'll let the taxpayers, the idiot taxpayers, I'm going to rip them off to fund my retirement. And now it's turning out that maybe the people who thought they were going to rip off the taxpayers, maybe they're going to be ripped off. The government employees are going to be ripped off, and I don't doubt that's going to happen. They're going to scream and shout, but I don't see that they have a strong moral basis for their argument. The truth of the matter is we have to understand that it's up to each of us to take care of ourselves for our own retirement. And insofar as we trust the government or we trust anyone else to say, oh, just give me your money, I'll take all your money now, and then 40 or 50 years from now, you're going to have a fabulous retirement. Well, maybe yes and maybe no. That's one of the things they talk about here in this article. They point out that they had their actuarial assumptions used in the bankruptcy were inaccurate and outdated. And this is part of the reason they discover, oops, they've got another $195 million they've got to come up with that they didn't anticipate when they went through the bankruptcy. They make these assumptions and they say, we presume that we're going to be able to collect. And in fact, they're still making some of these assumptions. One of them, with their modern calculations, with their most recent calculations, which recognize a new $195 million that they hadn't previously, they still think they're going to get 6.75% return on their investments each year. That strikes me as awfully optimistic, at least as long as the Federal Reserve is continuing to hold interest rates down in the neighborhood close to zero. How are they going to get 6.75%? And that's one of the assumptions they're still counting on. And what this means is they are still relying on flawed assumptions in order to convince people that their retirement program is sound and stable. And yes, sir, you can count on your retirement funds will be there. And the truth of the matter is it's at least highly probable that those funds won't be there. If only because the assumptions that they say, well, we assume we're going to make 6.75% return on all of our investments. That's a guess. That's a gamble. And insofar as anyone is selling you a pension system and they are making projections as to how much they are going to make 15, 20 years from now, they don't know what they're going to get. For all they know, we may go into another episode of negative interest rates. They don't know what we're going to get. How old are we? Are we already at our break and past, Melody, and you didn't tell me?
I didn't tell you. You don't listen to me anyway. So.
Well, I would have listened on this occasion.
What? Oh, you would? Oh, okay.
Yes, I would have listened on this occasion. All right, I hear Frank playing the piano in the background.
See, you listen to him.
Well, I listen to piano. I don't pay any attention to Frank either, okay. But the piano I pay attention to. That. All right, we're going to take a break, pick some commercials. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstraw on Financial Survival. Just before we took the break, just make one last comment on the situation in Detroit. Again, the comment from the article I was reading is absurd pension promises are the cause of Detroit's financial plight. That's not exactly true. It's true, but here's, you can't just blame this on the government who makes these absurd pension promises. You got to blame the people who fell for it, too. There's a certain amount of, this is reminiscent of a cliche, perhaps, I don't know, but you can't con an honest man. The idea behind these pensions that were overly generous in many instances, from the perspective that you don't have to put the money into your pension fund, we'll get the idiot taxpayers to do it. The people who went along with this, they said, look at the pension I'm going to get. What a fabulous deal this is. They were greedy. They weren't interested in funding their own retirement. They weren't interested in being prudent and sensible and reasonable and fair. That wasn't, they said, hey, belly up to the trough. You know, get yours while you can. And to heck with the rest of them. Well, now they're going to have a problem. And it appears that even though Detroit has resolved its pension problems through bankruptcy, turns out they've got more problems than they thought they had. And they're still working on assumptions that probably aren't going to work for them, which means the problem in Detroit is not yet resolved. They've just kicked that can down the road. And the lesson in all of this, from my perspective, is if you think you're going to have to retire, it's up to you to try to fund that retirement as best you can. It's only reasonable that you be responsible for your own retirement, and it's sensible. Right? What do you think is the best thing you can do? And if you want to gamble with your retirement, well, you'll gamble with your retirement. You can invest in some junk bonds or whatever you think. If you might get lucky and you might lose everything. But somewhere along the line, all of us have to regain that sense of personal responsibility. And if we do, we're going to be better off believing people who say, oh, give me your money now and we'll give you some back when, you know, 20, 30 years from now. Not a good choice.
Prior to the program, you and I were talking about people being confused or they're not sure what to do.
Yep.
So they do nothing. And as long as the markets...
And what we're talking about here, just so people understand, we're talking about people who can't make up their mind where to keep their money in their investments. Some people have said they have enough in treasuries. They don't want that anymore, but they don't know what to do. They want to get out of treasuries. They want to get out of paper, but they can't quite make up their mind. Where do they want to put their money?
You see the stock markets at these levels. People become a little complacent. There's a lot of information on the website. People who discuss our country's financial situation, they recommend, you know, as you mentioned, either junk bonds or junior mining shares. They recommend all kinds of crazy things.
People are pushing penny stocks right now, and they're giving
penny,
you examples.
Exactly.
They're great gambles, right? Yeah, they're much better than investing in lottery tickets, right? You have a higher probability of maybe making some good money off these things. That's a fact. You also have a higher risk attached to these things where you may lose your investment. So it's part of your mindset. What are you comfortable with? Are you a gambler? Well, then maybe you want to keep some paper. You want to keep your investments in paper where you can make a fast buck. Are you an investor that are trying to protect your principal and make sure it's still here 10 years from now and worth at least as much as it is today in terms of purchasing power?
Over the
That's
years,
investment. That's gold. That's silver.
Over the years, I hear daily, I truly wanted physical gold, but I was talked into something else. And now I regret I didn't listen to you. And that is, if you have a mindset, you have to do what you believe. I think most people want to be safe. They don't want the high risk. If you want to gamble a little bit, heck, go to Las Vegas. At least they give you a free drink because it's about the same. And the risk is about the same. Your return is about the same. Most likely you're going to lose. The only people that truly make money on the deal is the person that is trading you.
The person running the casino, they profit.
The fees they charge and trading you in and out, they're the ones that make the large sums of money. So, again, be sensible with your money and stick with
Not
what you know
sensible,
and what you
but
believe.
Courageous also. You know, when we talk about people that are confused, it's because they're listening. They listen to programs like this. They listen to other programs that have a different investment philosophy, right? And they don't know, should we go this way? Should we go that way? Well, again, I'm telling you, you have to accept the idea that you must be personally responsible. First point. Second point, you need the courage to pull the trigger. Right? This isn't just little, it's not an easy situation. I know that it's challenging, but still, you have to have, if you have enough intelligence where you come to a particular conclusion and say, I need to do this, it's not enough to say, I think I should do this. You got to have the courage to step out and say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it now. All right? That courage is important, and you're going to have to find some rationale to make your move. And from our perspective, if you look at fundamentals, I don't doubt that you can point to a number of different investments that in the next week or two or month or two or even a year, they may do better than gold or silver. They might. They might do much worse. But you can't show me. Warren Buffett, he made the comment, he said, don't invest in anything that you wouldn't be content to just set off to the side and go back. Don't even look at it for 10 years. Go back after 10 years and open the box and see what it's worth. What would you invest in? What would you invest in that you think you could just set it off to the side, don't even think about it, don't look at it, for 10 years? And have a reasonable expectation that at the end of 10 years, your investment would still be, your capital would still be there, your investment, your purchasing power would be at least as high as it was and maybe much higher. Can you name an investment other than gold or silver? I know there's some that'll pan out, but you can't anticipate them in the sense that you can say, well, I'm going to invest in this penny stock and it'll be fabulous 10 years from. Maybe it'll be fabulous. It's like investing in a lottery ticket. Some of them turn out, you know, pretty spectacular, but most of them are losers.
You know what, Alan?
Silver works. It satisfies Buffett's.
It's not only the return. It's also about if you're carrying if you're carrying a promise to pay, and you go to liquidate. And if you believe we're going to have terrible times in this country, do you believe you will get your funds?
Mm-hmm.
I used to trade options. Someone said to me, well, you know, we could be making a lot of money. And if you believe that when the system collapses, the markets are going to freeze, they're going to close down, it'll take years to litigate to get our funds, and then we might never see them again. And I never played again. And that's true. That's very very true. People have short memories. Just going back to 2009, 2010, people would try to call their brokers to sell their paper. They couldn't get through. They were put on hold. It took days. And it just wasn't 2009 and 2010. It goes back to every time the market has dropped significantly. People can't get through. People can't liquidate. The prices continue to get lower. 9/11. Markets were closed. The Dow was closed. Wall Street was closed. It was closed for over a week. The gold market was closed, but not as long as the stock markets were. Gold came back. I think gold was back a day and a half after 9/11, but the stock markets were down a week. So you could trade your gold and silver. And
that's the problem with all of these digital investments, these paper investments. They have a great, these are for speculators, right? These are for gamblers. They will claim otherwise, but the reason the stockbroker calls you every week to see if he can get you to buy something else, sell what you got and buy something else, the reason he's doing that is he's looking for gamblers and speculators, and you can make a fast buck. It's a little bit the same idea. You can't con an honest man. You have to be sensible, in my opinion, where you sit back and say, what is a sensible investment? Not one that I might get spectacularly lucky, all right, like a lottery ticket. What is a sensible investment? From my perspective, that's the way you should look at this. Other people, they want to make something spectacular now. Fine. that's a good, you know, if you get lucky and it works out, good for you. But if it goes south on you, and it can, just like Melody's talking about people that they couldn't get through to their broker, those paper prices dropped dramatically. And how do you get rid of them? How do you protect yourself? Vulnerable when you're involved in paper debt instruments. To my mind, gold, steady, gets it done, great potential. It's hard, you know, that it's not a guaranteed, absolute guarantee.
There's no guarantee in life, period.
That's exactly right. But some things are far more probable than others.
There's only one guarantee in life.
Other than taxes?
I don't even include taxes in that.
Well, that's what I said, other than taxes.
No, yeah. I do want to make a mention to the movie. We had Chuck Undersea on the program maybe about a month ago, three weeks ago. And I got an email. It was short. I just noticed it yesterday. And Chuck Undersea and his wife, Anita, they released Revelation, Dawn of Global Government in Houston on April 15th. They're looking to promote this nationally. They're actually going to have a showing in Pennsylvania, and they need some funds to get this, to get certain people to fly into Pennsylvania. I don't have the time to go into details, but I know Chuck and Anita, and they wouldn't ask for funds if they didn't need it. I trust them. And I trust you, the listeners, to help out a little bit, whether it be a buck, whether it be $5, whatever. But you can go to their website, revelationthemovie.info. I'm sure you can follow the link on the website. You can use PayPal on their contact page, or you can email them. I don't even think they have a phone number in this particular email that they sent me. But support them. It's an important movie. They put their heart and soul in this. This is like a part two. They spent years putting this movie together. And I think it's a worthwhile.
Okay, so we want to get the revelationthemovie.info?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. Dawn of the Global Government.
We're out of time. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, have a good evening, and may the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day, and pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.